going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back with a non-double feature edition of WTF Prime Time! This is Evangelist, and I am joined once again by Gog Dog.
Hi!
Welcome, sir.
How are you?
You know what? I'm pretty excited. We're only talking about one episode. I feel pretty pumped. I really liked watching it. I watched it in HD, and I just busted open my ARMS Micron, Terracon, Cliffjumper, and Skywarp. So I'm feeling like primified right now.
Oh, man. I heard one of us did not watch it in high definition.
Oh, no. Well, also here with us today is Aaron.
Yeah, my roommates are hogging the television for the last week.
Well, you gotta just go in there, you gotta kick that door down, and just go like, listen, high def prime, goddammit. Shake them.
I may have to. Whose house is this? Is this your house? No. No, it's my house.
And it's like, hey, guess what? There's more of us.
I want to watch my children's TV show.
There's more of us than there are of you. And you're like, yeah, well, then you got to bust out your secret weapons.
Hey, the kid likes Transformers. At least he likes moving things on the magic screen.
They're amazing.
It's all the same.
See, if you had a retractable Chinese sword like I do as of last weekend, you'd be able to. I'll talk about that in like 2 days. We're here to talk to you today, ladies and gentlemen, about Triangulation, another installment, the second one, in fact, of the four-part simultaneous episode extravaganza. How'd you like that? This episode featured Optimus Prime, oddly enough, as the main Autobot force, and some other dudes, one of whom I did not expect to see in the episode at all, and he played quite a big role, that being Starscream. I just want to open up by talking a little bit about Starscream, because it's kind of the habit of Starscream in Season 2 to kind of steal the show in any episode he's in, because I think that they're doing a really good job with him. I really was enjoying a lot of his moments in this episode, particularly when he encountered the Decepticons on his crazy little, like, Decepticon moped thing. I really love the range of emotions he showed, because I love how he's so not a static character. Like, he sees the Decepticons, he's like, oh, I better not mess with them. They turn around, shoot at him, he flees for his life. And then when they gun down his little moped and surround him, he gets up and just gets all outraged at them until he sees the dude that he thought was dead, because he doesn't know that Dreadwing is a twin brother. And then I love how even after that, when Dreadwing says that he's Megatron's first lieutenant, Starscream, while handcuffed, has this one moment of completely uncowardly, just like, emotional flip out of like, that's who I'm supposed to be! And then like, realizes he's got guns pointed at him and calms down again. Like, I love Starscream's range, and I love how nothing goes right for the poor guy. Like, I continue to feel sorry for him, even like, up until the point where he gets the amazing plot device, and then I was sitting there, and I was like, I love how I'm so torn between rooting for him and hoping somebody takes him down. Also, I'm going to throw a quick challenge out to third parties, and specifically Dr. Wu. All you guys trying to get people excited, you know, with all your prime faces and guns and swords. You want to get me really excited? Make me that moped that Starscream was riding. Make it in scale with deluxe first edition Starscream. Make it so you can plug pieces on so the Voyager Starscream can ride it. I want Starscream to have a moped, please and thank you. And this is all even leaving out the awesome opening scene in which Starscream is trying to pump himself up to do surgery on himself and does not pull it off. A lot of good Starscream in this episode, in my own opinion. Gog, you are a Starscream man, much like Daniel Day-Lewis is an oil man. How'd you feel about Starscream in this episode?
I like Starscream. I liked a lot of his subtle moments when Prime was talking to someone on the communicator and you just see Starscream's facial reactions in the background.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, he's just so believable. And, like, the whole thing where Starscream generally, like, when he's one-on-one with you and he's in a position to where he can't do anything about it, how just dreadfully honest he is, that, like, that stuff all came out too. And he looks at Prime and he's like, well, we all just can't be as goody two shoes as you and whatever it was exactly that he said. But I liked him, and I liked him a little less once he was in the position of power, because then he's just like, oh, well, I don't have to take crap from anybody now, and just kind of became Mr. Oh, look at me. You can't do nothing to me. Ha ha ha. So It's going to be interesting to see where he goes from now, since he's still in possession of the Apex armor. But yeah. I liked him more up to the point to where he got it. But that was when the shift for me focused to the other two characters, and I very much enjoyed, and we'll talk about that later, but I very much enjoyed their interaction. So I don't think that the episode necessarily suffered from it. But.
And I want to just quickly add, I'm talking about this moped, but after you make the moped, I would also like it if someone could make me the Apex armor and just let me be able to fold up first edition Starscream, stick him in the torso. I really like the design of that thing, even though it was completely un-Starscream, aside from his little tiny head sticking out of the kind of like classic retro dome helmet that was going on in that
thing. It's like the classic Space Marine type armor, where it's like you're looking at it, and then you're looking at the anatomy of the person inside of it, and you're just like, it doesn't necessarily fit, and you're trying to figure out, like, well, is his arms controlling something inside, or is it really around his arms? And so it's, I don't know, it was funny. I thought the armor design overall was actually kind of uninspired. I it was kind of generic looking, so I would have liked for it to have gotten more of a cooler original design, other than just kind of being a big set of gray arms and legs with a dome. But
I think the dome is what made me be less bored by it. Only because it was a clear, like, plexiglass dome over his head with, like, little diode lights around his face. Like,
yeah,
that aspect of it is what pushed it from, like, oh, it's a big man, to, like, okay, that's kind of cool retro sci-fi stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That part was cool. And I really like the part where he's shouting at them, and the sun is not shining in the dome, so you're just getting like this very small glimpse of his face from inside the darkness, but his eyes are just completely illuminated. Yeah. So you have his head that's emoting, but you can't really make out a whole lot, except for the bright eyes. And it was a nice touch of animation there for sure.
And I'm if I don't bring it up, remind me if we hit a dead point here. I have a lot to say about facial animation this episode. And you make a very good point too about something I just realized I really enjoyed it is how Starscream, when there's two characters with him, he'll get very manipulative and he'll be just trying to win favor with whoever he thinks is going to win the fight, because he just wants to survive. But then when he's on his own with somebody, he does get like rather delightfully honest, like just bitter and unfiltered. It's kind of cool. Starscream in Prime is really well done. Aaron, how about you? Did you have any thoughts on Mr. Scream?
He pulled off a lot of very Starscreamy moments. I think he kind of flipped sides twice in the course of the episode before going all Starscream once he got the armor.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say, on the point of the scooter, all I wanted out of that was a little meep meep horn. At some point, like as the Viacom jets first go over, if you just heard that little meep meep, I probably would have lost it for 5 minutes. Because just the absurdness of the Transformer riding on the little scooter. So somebody had a good or bad sense of humor.
Looking at it. I think once you watch the way that thing is displayed artistically when he's fleeing from the jet vehicons,
yeah,
that felt very, very intentional.
It almost seemed like he would have been faster just running.
Yeah.
You know, whenever you see the person on the Rascal scooter, you're like, really? Come on, just step off of it.
Just insisted on staying on that thing.
Yeah. But for the rest of Starscream, it didn't seem like, to me, and a lot of this episode to me didn't seemed like it was a great episode. It seemed very slow and not, I guess we've had a whole lot of the boom, boom, boom episodes like I've talked about before. And this one just seemed to be not as impactful.
One thing that I did notice in the end credits, which may or may not relate to what you're saying, and I feel like it kind of does, is there were only 6 voice actors on this episode.
Yeah.
Like it was a very, very, light cast episode.
Yeah. It just seemed like not having a real B plot, like not having an extra plot in there, tended to drag things out.
Yeah, I mean, I personally was digging it, I think, just because all of those longer scenes were being carried by, not a surprisingly good performance from Starscream, but I think that I was ready to be kind of bored with the episode when I saw who the main cast of it would be, and I was really pleasantly surprised by how much I was getting into Prime and Dreadwing, which we're probably going to talk about next, but... Yeah, I mean, it was a very light episode in terms of how many people were in it and what the actual events were.
Right.
But personally, I felt that was all right because there was so much effectiveness in what it was doing. I was like, if it's light but effective, I'm still cool with it myself. Uncomfortable silence.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I've watched the episode three times, and each time it's just seemed... I mean, there's a lot that happens, and you get to see a lot of action, and this, I guess, is more of an overall thing, but it just seems like with that extra time, they didn't fill it with extra story, just more shots, which could be an HD difference of, the Mexican standoff that happens.
I was going to bring that up. I brought it up in the pre-show. Like, was that just dead boring for you to watch in standard
def? That was, I mean, I could see that, yeah, there's a Mexican standoff and that there was tension there, but with the encoded download sitting on my computer, I know that there was some twitching and some shifting, but it wasn't, this is a place where I would definitely say it probably plays to the HD factor that I bet in HD there was a whole lot more going on or more tension building from that than like, okay, it's a Mexican standoff. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Something.
I will expand upon that when I get my next turn because it was definitely a moment where I was sitting there watching it and I was like, I'm surprised how gripped I am by this very anime-esque everyone is staring at each other scene.
Yeah.
It
may be just something that it seemed like it was off the normal rhythm of Prime episodes that might have been part of the deal.
There's a lot more subtle animation going on than I recall seeing of late. But I really want to hold off on that until we have some more character discussion.
But as Starscream, the one other thing is I definitely thought that it was ballsy that for a moment we may have gotten to see him do some surgery on himself. I mean, as the episode opened, I was actually kind of getting excited to see how that was going to work.
I loved how he was trying to psych himself up and couldn't.
Yeah.
That was so good, because who would be able to do that to themselves?
Right. That's the more manly than I is the... there's a story that I remembered seeing somewhere about the Antarctic researcher that got appendicitis. And the person that got appendicitis was the doctor.
Oh.
So it was this Russian, I think it was Russian dude that had to perform an appendectomy on himself with like the machinist and other general scientist person helping holding mirrors and stuff.
Jesus.
And Yeah, so...
I thought you were going to bring up that dude who, like, gnawed off his own arm to get out of an avalanche or whatever that was that happened way back.
Oh, yeah, the whatever, 87 hours or...
Yeah.
But no, seeing that hearkened me to that, and I was like, okay, this could be interesting, and then it went a completely different way that, obviously they got to chase down the relic or MacGuffin.
Well, I think if he'd actually done the surgery to himself, I would not have bought it as much as I did him... just sitting there moving this sharp spinning object towards his chest, just getting more and more tense. Just like, it was almost like he was praying for something to happen to make him have to not do it. It was great.
The surgeon was Leonid Rogozov.
Badass.
Look up self appendectomy and it pops up.
I'm sure there are not a lot of results other than him for self appendectomy.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on from there. And Gog, I'd like to know a topic you'd like to bring up.
Let's just talk about good old Dreadwing and Prime, I guess.
Yeah.
I had to make sure I was saying it right because I was doing fine until Aaron kept calling him whatever it was a few weeks ago. And now I'm going to make sure I get it right. Yeah.
Thunder Dread?
Yeah.
Wing Wing.
Wing Wing.
That's not his name?
I really enjoyed their interactions together, and I like is I don't want to say boring, but like I guess I could understand how some people might think Dreadwing is boring, but like I dig this guy. He's almost kind of like a Dinobot that never switched sides. Like he's aggressive, he's angry, but he's honorable. He's not the type of guy that would stab you in the back. And I like how every time he comes, every episode that he's in, it's not just some he's just going to show up and start shooting everywhere. Like that part of his character is coming out and it's affecting the plot. And I dug it. And I like how Optimus knows that he can appeal to him, not necessarily to just give up because Dreadwing is a badass and he's not going to just set down swords because Prime says it's not the right thing to do. But if the situation calls for it, they could end up as partners to a greater foe. And even at the end, when they have nothing left to fight for, and Prime appeals to him to put down his weapons, and he does. And yeah, he makes the whole, like, yeah, next time we see each other, I'm gonna kill you. And I kind of like that reaction from Prime, where he's like, you know, no, duly noted, or whatever he said, as he flies off. And it's just kind of this melancholy, where Prime's like, I really don't want to kill this guy, because I already had to do it to his brother. This dude could... The only reason why he's a Decepticon is because some probably arbitrary reason, and this dude could make just as good of an Autobot. Like Prime, yeah. When I hear Prime talk to him, it's like Prime wants him on his side. Like Prime sees a greater good in Dreadwing, and he's like, look, you could come to us and make and end this, and we can go on about our lives, but. Like Prime sees value in him as a teammate. Like he doesn't. That didn't happen when he looks at Starscream. Like Starscream's like, you know, I want to join you. And the first thing Prime says is, "We don't have a prison for you, sorry." But you know, if Dreadwing was to say that, I think Prime would welcome him with open arms. And just all the interactions between the two characters in this episode were just. I mean, it was nothing incredibly epic, but like it was just good subtle character development. And much like how we have other characters on the screen that I'm like, oh, I can't wait till these guys see each other again. Like this is definitely becoming one of my favorite pairings as Optimus and Dreadwing. So yeah. It makes me wonder if the writers, if that's something that they would ever consider, is actually having someone straight up switch sides.
I'm sure it's not impossible to happen when they've basically shown that, like, hey, anyone might also just die at any given point. And the thing, when I mentioned surprises before, like, it's not that I've disliked Dreadwing in the show, but the combination of having the episode be about him and Optimus Prime had me ready to be kind of bored for this episode. I'm not gonna lie. Like, that's how I went in, going like, okay, it's gonna be like Mr. Stoic and the badass honor dude, and it might just be a whole lot of pontificating and long dialogues. But what I really enjoyed about it, number one, I really like that Optimus Prime seems to be quite genuinely remorseful about the death of Skyquake, which we had all kind of reacted to as a bit of a throwaway death way, way, way back when that actually happened. So yeah. I really like how, like, and I, you know, I'm eating a bit of crow. Skyquake's death had serious ramifications and has had some serious dramatic after effect. It just took season two for it to happen. And I definitely am eating some crow on that, because I believe I was among those saying, like, this felt kind of throwaway, and, like, I mean, I was the one who was going, like, I don't think he's really dead, and I was wrong about that, too. And with Dreadwing, I think that, oddly enough, the thing that I've come to like about Dreadwing, and this is really weird, is I've come to really enjoy Tony Todd's slightly awkward delivery of all of his lines. Like, if you listen to his speaking cadence, there's something, like, that is just paused enough about it to feel a little bit strange. But for some reason, the way they animate Dreadwing's face, it totally clicked with me this episode. I was like, I actually kind of like how, instead of him going, like, Lord Megatron, I will do this, he's always like, Lord Megatron, I will do this for you. Like, this really weird, like, just drawn out enough to be strange kind of cadence in the way he speaks. The way that they've matched up that voice to that face is really was not something I thought I would be able to get into, and I have. Also, it was fun to see his arsenal of weapons, you know, being drawn and stored. And yeah, I never realized how phallic his gun looked until it was like literally a white tube with a glowing red tip. And I was sitting there going like, ah, ha, 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 ha.
Did you realize that his gun handle is also his sword handle?
Yeah, I saw that too. Because I was sitting there going like, where is the sword coming from? And I was like, oh, wait, it all like plugs together on his back. That was super
now,
cool.
If the toy doesn't do that, that's going to be the end of the world.
Well, are you sure it's the same? Because when he crawls out of the ice after Prime drops that avalanche on him, he sticks his gun on his back, and then he walks up and picks up his sword.
I was thinking about that. I suspect that
I think both of his swords
connect to his gun. Like,
it might be, because later on when he tells off Prime, you know, when Prime gives him the, hey, you could join the Autobot speech, he does the big sword, dramatic sword swing, goes overhead, and then puts it on his back. And when he does that, his gun doesn't have a handle. And then he lets go, and there's a handle.
Oh, so you think it's one handle, and he can plug it into whichever one that he's using?
That's what I think. I think it's two swords that plug into one gun. Then whatever. Because I noticed he slung a sword over one shoulder, and later on slung his cannon over the same shoulder with a similar-looking handle. And I don't think that was a quirk, so I'm...
I think that there may have been maybe an animation hiccup or something in there is what I'm saying, because the two or three times that he did it, it looked like it was the handle was going to the same place, be it sword or gun. And that when he busted out of the ice, that they just had him grab something to show, like, how serious I am.
Well, the other thing to notice too is that his weapons are I don't know of any of the characters that do it. Well, I guess Knockout does it, but like they're like most of the characters, both Autobot and Decepticon, all have integrated weapons, and Dreadwing has none. Like all of his weapons are slung and are completely separate from his body. Whereas with almost all the other characters, like all their guns and stuff flip out of their arms or they replace their hands and stuff like that. And all of his are completely separate and handheld from his body.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. I know Knockout has the shock pole, but doesn't he have like arm blasters like everybody else? I can't remember at all now. But
I know he's got the drill and the saw that he's
used
before.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. He has like the surgical tools stuff. So all of Dreadwing's weapons so far look like, unless he has some, and he has his bombs too, his sticky bombs, which I was happy to
come
see
out
those
of subspace or something.
Yeah, he just has, you know, a dispenser, and it was
all
cool
look like
too
bits of them.
Yeah, but his cannon, like he cocked it in a different way and it straight up just turns into like a lobbing grenade launcher. That was neat too. But and his sword just looks badass. Like, that's the coolest looking melee weapon I think we've seen in the show.
I really want the toy to be able to pull off some of those sleek swordsman poses he was pulling, because his body type, I did not envision it doing some of those really cool, like, legs together, sword pointed forward kind of poses.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm starting to build up a vision of the character that I worry the toy may not be able to hold up to at this point.
Yeah. But
we haven't seen it in hand yet, so I don't know yet.
Yeah. But no, Dreadwing is quickly becoming one of my favorite characters in this show. As understated as he is, you know, he's not over the top or anything. It's just his personality. I dig him. How he's not really conflicted, but he's not just a straight up douchebag. He definitely serves an evil lord, but he is much more of an honorable creature than the master that he serves.
But Aaron, how have you taken Tony Todd not just being the Fallen so far in his Dreadwing?
I do like his acting of the character, the way that he expresses the character, because it does have quite a bit of the Dinobot feel of, you know, he's not just a blind follower he does seem to have honor. Because him and Prime could have kept duking it out until one of them dropped at the end of the episode. But, you know, he feels that he has some sort of debt there. An honor debt or something similar. So I like that they're not taking it all as all Decepticons or mustache-twirling evil villains. So I do enjoy that. It just seems like this episode could have had something pop in it. And I just keep going back to that, and it didn't. And it would have been, maybe it would have been nice to see him consider changing sides to the Autobots. Even if he didn't, at least, I'll think about what you're saying. And then it seems like something's happened rather than just, no, because of the previous debt, I'm not going to blow your face off this time.
Did you at all feel like you were hoping for perhaps more out of him meeting Starscream for the first time, given how Starscream has kind of horrifically desecrated the body of his dead brother?
Well, I don't think that Starscream, did he ever make that known that he had done that? I mean, one of Starscream's secret things. Maybe because there was a little bit of the kind of spit take reaction out of that. So, maybe, some more of that. But it seems like there were some threads that could have been pulled on. That wouldn't have even necessarily meant anything. Would have had some impact.
Yeah, I could have done with a little bit more. I don't know. Like, I could have done with perhaps just a touch more drama between Starscream and Dreadwing. Yeah. It did feel perhaps just a little bit too understated, the way he was kind of like, I'm apprehend you because you're a traitor.
Right.
Come with me. I think it was kind of funny that he was so, and this is actually a bit more of a positive, but he was so set in his ways that he was like, hey, I'm going to devote a third of my squadron to having you walk around with us in handcuffs. And I'm going to have those two guys in the back. Make sure you don't run anywhere.
Right. Well, it just seemed odd because you'd think that Starscream, I mean, he knows that he's outmatched with the whole Scooter deal, and I don't know. It just seems like characters not playing to themselves. You know, between Starscream, I'd see some sort of fight, or, if it's so important that he be apprehended, go ahead and send the two drones back to the Nemesis with him. But then you wouldn't have Starscream to drive the plot, so.
Yeah, but I was also kind of wondering. I mean, there's a lot of explanations that could be given for it. Tons of explanations that could be given for it. Some of which I thought of myself. But I was wondering, like, what happened to that remote control he was so proud of a few seconds ago? Where'd it go?
Yeah.
Like, did he just drop? Like, I was like, perhaps he dropped it when he got blown off the moped. Maybe he didn't want to show that he had it because he didn't want to play all his cards.
Right away. But then why at the end of the episode is he trudging along on the ocean floor bottom?
Well, then I was thinking, like, maybe he can't access it now that his body is all, like, binary bonded into this crazy Apex armor. Like, that was a moment of a plot device where I wish that there had been a line to explain why we didn't see it again.
Yeah, I think that might be what a lot of my feeling is in this episode. Like, just a line. Just one line. That'd be nice.
Hmm. Well, I mean, he was on the scooter, and then from that point on, he was attacked and then held prisoner. Then he found the armor and was inquiring about. He basically wanted to take them out. He had no fear, no reason to ground bridge at that point because he was basically invincible. And then he's on the ocean floor. You can't ground bridge from the bottom of the ocean because then all the ocean water would fill up the Harbinger. I mean, it's not something that really went unexplained without any reason, because the only time, like, he remote controlled in with the ground bridge, and then from that point on he was a prisoner, and then once he had the armor he just didn't give a crap. So I mean, that's the way I took it.
It was one of those cases where I think that it's really easy to figure out a way for it to not have, or it's easy to figure out what happened to it, but I wish that the show had mentioned their definitive answer. Offhanded.
Yeah, there are plenty of things that we can sit here and suss out and logic out, but at the same time it'd be nice if they just said, it's like, oh, I got to walk all the way back to land because all this water will do so, Granted, it's a throwaway line to satiate the nitpickers, but
I'm just noticing also,
that's kind of what we do in these episodes, so.
I love this part where Starscream is just, like, ripping and beating his way through that ice to get at that relic. That was... I love how desperate he was there. He's like, I'm gonna get it!
Yeah.
Aaron, have you got a talking point you'd like to bring up?
Apex armor seems a whole lot like Marvel's Juggernaut.
I was thinking that when I saw it.
just pure up invincible. Plus with the dome helmet, it kind of seems big, round, and invincible. And the way that Starscream reacted through everything seemed like it was just invulnerable to a, I don't know about to a fault, but, you know, it surely is the apex of armors.
A great apex throwback name use as well. Name dropping apex armor.
Yeah, that did get a golf clap for Fanwank. But
yeah, I mean, that's not something that you're going to bring up very easily, because that's what apex armor was only ever the American name for God Bomber in a PVC figure.
I think so. I think that's the extent of it.
What did they call it in the Hasbro reissue? Commemorative series.
Apex Armor, I believe.
Yeah, that was the Apex Armor.
Sorry, for the commemorative as well.
Yeah.
And the design of it, like, I love the way that it unfolded. And there's a very specific part of this armor that I enjoyed, which is when Starscream is leaning back, and inside the glass dome, all you see are his two beady red eyes and his smile. And, like, the rest of his face is enshrouded in shadow. I love the way that looked inside this giant, crazy armor. I don't know. Something about the art style of the head part of it is what brought it together for me. Because, like, I'm watching it in motion right now. And for sure, if the head had not been so effective to my tastes, I think I would have taken it a whole lot more blasé than the way I'm reacting to it now. Mm-hmm. Also, when I was watching him put the armor on, the arms of the armor did form over his own arms, and his wings did retract. So this thing, like, did actually integrate itself into his own physicality to some extent.
Yeah,
which makes sense given that, you know, he's a transformer and that's what they do. But
I guess it was in Exiles the Apex armor is also mentioned.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I need to read that sometime.
Created by Solus Prime. It was kind of a throwaway line, remembering now, since I broke down and finally read Exiles.
Hmm.
But it was Alpha Trion, I think, listed it as some things that he maybe wondered where it got off to or something like that.
Well, what was weird is when Starscream found the armor, he made a comment about the armor being of Decepticon origin.
Yeah.
When he broke it out of the ice, so I'm not sure what was up with that. Because
talking weird aligned continuity versus...
Well, I don't mean just that, though. But it was, like Prime. Like, Prime, when Prime saw, he's like, the Apex armor. And the fact that Starscream had kind of hinted that it had Decepticon origins, it almost seemed like this had been some sort of legendary tool, maybe even used against the Autobots years past.
Yeah.
But...
yeah, I'm curious about the backstory on the thing, because it definitely was a really cool, like, amidst all the plot devices we've seen, I think this is a very cool one. And I was hearkening back while I was watching this. Hearkening? What kind of word is that to use in this situation? I was thinking about how I was saying that I really hope it isn't a case of, like, the Autobots get a relic, the Decepticons get a relic, trade back and forth, we all get relics. I was actually really happy that one of the third-party factions, that being Starscream, is the one who got a hold of this thing. Because that means that it's now within, like, already on the second episode. Unless Starscream inexplicably joins one of the two sides, which I doubt he will, it's no longer a case of all these relics just being, like, power-ups for all the good guys and the bad guys. Like, now one of the relics is attached quite literally to one of the third parties of this fictional struggle, and I'm really happy about that.
And it suits Starscream too, because Starscream has been for most of this season basically an action master. Mm-hmm. So having him have kind of this upgrade armor where all he can do is walk around anyway, it kind of suits his situation. It almost gives him an excuse not to have to operate on himself and do the whole TCOG transplant.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he doesn't really care anymore, because I doubt he can fly in that armor anyway. So unless it can just retract and be like a chest plate when it's not in use, but that remains to be seen.
That would be cool if he could, like, just pop the armor out of nowhere. Like, if people, if he encounters some people who don't know he has it yet, and they all surround him, he just puts the chest plate on and just armors up like a badass.
I at least kind of like the story idea of him being stuck in that at this point.
Yeah, I mean, also, yeah, that is also a good point. Like, and having watched it three times myself now, like, seeing the way the armor was literally integrating into his body, I wonder if it is possible for him to remove it himself, if at all. Also, I thought, Starscream had made more clones and was going to get the clones to do the surgery on him, but that didn't happen. Just to reference the beginning of the episode once again. So yeah, Apex armor. I would also love to get some form of plastic representation of that thing, because I like the way it turned out. I just want to bring up the thing I was talking about before, which was some of the subtle animation stuff in this episode. A lot of this could be seen in the Mexican standoff, because it was not just, like, outright facial twitches. In the standoff, there are parts where someone's hand is in the foreground and in extreme close-up, and the person they're talking to is in a very wide shot on the other side of the frame. The hand that's in extreme close-up, like Prime's hand specifically, and I believe Dreadwing's as well, they do this extremely minor but highly natural, just like middle finger, ring finger twitch. Like, not even a twitch, but just like a little flick, just a little muscle movement of like, is something going to happen here? And everyone in those close-ups were doing things like that. Like, either they were just sitting there going, like, huh? Huh? Or in their faces, there'd just be these tiny little movements of, like, well, huh? And, like, it was, I thought, really well done. I've said a lot of things about subtle animation in Prime, and this was, like, some of the subtlest animation I've seen in the show. Just these tiny, tiny little movements. I'm not sure how visible they were in the standard def encode, but I was seeing them in the 720p encode that I found, and was really impressed by it. So, I mean, once again, huge hats off to the dudes working on this, because they took that Mexican standoff scene, which was such an anime trope of, like, everyone standing there, and we're going to pan by all of them for, like, 30 seconds, and then someone's going to pull a gun and shoot. And they made it way more interesting to me because everyone was moving very slightly during that whole scene. Or, you know, some people a little bit more overtly than others. But just all the little slight motions really dragged me and gripped me right into what was going on. And also, you know, great action animation once again. Some lovely Starscream facial animation. I do find myself starting to agree with those who are making the case that he's one of the most emotive characters in the show. I know, the animation in this episode really did it for me. I think the only weakness I saw was the part where Prime transforms from truck to robot. didn't even mean to do that. That was an accident. When he's going to, like, right before the Mexican standoff, it looked like they did that thing I don't like sometimes where they kind of just run the animation cycle and the model glides while it does so. That was literally the only moment of animation I was not into, I think, in this episode. Really impressed. I know, did either of you guys feel any particular feelings about the animation?
I loved it. I mean, like I had said before, like the whole when Prime was talking with I think it was Fowler on the radio, and you there was a couple times where Prime was talking to somebody, and he Starscream was just making kind of at one point it was almost like he was cursing under his breath, like it was good. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, Starscream is I was reading a blog post someone shared with me, I think it was Wulong T, to someone breaking down what they felt about the qualities of the silhouettes and the face designs of the Prime characters, and there was much to be said about Starscream. I think it's just the beady eyes and the wide mouth, like he's just, and the eyebrows, he's able to pull such good faces. Aaron, I want to just confirm, like, the Mexican standoff, it sounds like you could see some of the motions, but did you see anything that was really tiny?
There wasn't a whole lot of, I mean, I figure if it was a proper Mexican standoff, you see little finger twitches,
you did.
Foot movements. I didn't see that. I saw like a reshuffle of legs of a Viacon and some things like that, but at least in my full screen for two viewings and three quarter screen that I'm going through again for like my fourth or so MCU right now, you don't really see a whole lot of that action. So
that's a bummer. Because yeah,
at least throw your standard def on a good sized TV, not a 22-inch monitor.
This does though kind of confirm my theory, which is that like the HD on Prime in that scene was truly like it was. Oh man, I'm gonna do it again. I almost said transformative again. I'm not gonna do that.
Don't say transformative.
It was night and day basically for that scene, like whether you saw it in standard def or high def, it seems. We have a season out on Blu-ray now. I think this is even more of a case. Like, this is a show to buy on Blu-ray if you can, because you got to be able to see some of that really good stuff, or legitimately an episode might not have as impactful a moment in it as it could. Anyway, that's just me gushing about the animation for a little while. Gog, how did you feel about the episode in yet another way we could discuss?
I think we covered most of the stuff that really stood out to me. The one thing I note there, I did find, speaking of animation errors, I did see one. There was a part where it was when Prime comes down, when they have Starscream in the handcuffs, Dreadwing had made the comment like, well, sounds like we're on equal footing, you know, except for it's 5 against 1. And Starscream's like, well, it could be 6 against 1 if you take these handcuffs off me. And he holds his hands up and he has the handcuffs on. And then there's another part where, like, around the parts of the Mexican standoff. And then it shows Starscream without the handcuffs. And then it shows them with them on again. So, I don't know. It's nothing minor. It was just there was a scene where they forgot to add the handcuffs in. So, because at first I thought maybe they were trying to insinuate that he had kind of broken out and then was going to attack when nobody was looking, but then the next scene he had him back on again. Mm-hmm. So it might be possible that what Aaron had said about the whole sword hilt thing could have been an animation error as well.
I really hope that the toy is effective enough for us to be able to determine that based on it, but I'm not super sure. Yeah, I mean, animation error-wise, I can't think of any other ones myself that really stuck out to me in any way. I just missed them. Aaron, have you got another talking point?
Oh, not really at this point. I find it odd that the humans got ahead of everybody else. In the middle of Antarctica, that they would find this thing. And then Fowler not even really know about it, maybe.
Yeah,
because he had the contacts to get the human base cleared out.
I thought that was going to be Mech, honestly. Like, given how there seemed to be no pretense for those humans to be there in the first place, I was like, oh, is it Mech? And it wasn't, which I think actually was for the better, because if it was, that would have really cluttered the episode.
Right.
But, yeah, the human presence in the episode was kind of odd, especially when they all just took off in helicopters, so we never even saw them. I was sitting there kind of going, like, who were they? Like, were they government? Were they a research team connected to government? Like, were they military? I don't know. They have helicopters. Apparently they were, like, told, hey, guys, leave your base for an hour. Come back later.
Come back later, clean up once it's all said and done.
Yeah. I wanted to actually go into a little bit myself about, in the intro to this episode, they once again started to set up some of the cross-weaving potential where, like, we open up and, we basically get a bit of a teaser for the next episode, which is Ratchet and Wheeljack heading off to do their own thing with Prime, kind of giving them the reason why they should team up. And also, I thought kind of a neat moment of, like, Bulkhead running through the space bridge after he was clearly given a briefing that we may not, like, we may very well hear 2 episodes from now. And what's kind of cool is, so we saw the first team to leave. We've seen evidence of the next 2 teams. We watched Prime go somewhere. But the second group to leave, that being Bulkhead, we're not going to actually know about till the end, it looks like. I really like this whole simultaneous storytelling thing, because it does seem like there's a lot of crisscrossing going on. I still don't know who Fowler was talking to at the end of that last episode, because this time like, I thought it was Prime, but clearly it wasn't, so I'm not sure what's up. I'm really digging this storytelling idea. It's a very cool motif, and I really hope that it can pay off even harder and better in the next 2 episodes. I am supremely pumped for next week's episode for very obvious reasons. But
yeah, Okay, do you want? Can we? Have you seen the trailer?
I would like to discuss the trailer from this.
Yeah. Okay.
This is the spoiler section. Dun. If you don't want to have any slight tiny spoilers for next week's episode, quit now. Bum, bum.
All right, you had your warning. So here is this screenshot, and you remember, remember me and my little what I would like to see out of a Soundwave moment.
Mm-hmm.
So watching this trailer made me like I had a tweet a few days ago and I think I just said oh god and
I was wondering what that was about.
Yeah.
Well, that was me watching the what is the name of the episode, Triage.
Yeah
but seeing that and just it really makes me wonder if I may have just accidentally hit something on the head again. I'm not getting my hopes up. But
they highlighted it hugely in that teaser when you see the sword like scraping. Like when I watched the teaser, I saw the sword scraping the faceplate. I was like, "What?"
Then just straight up cracked. And so I don't know how true this is because I think most of this stuff was said at New York Comic Con, which I didn't go to, but I've seen some people in threads have said that the writers have claimed that we will hear Soundwave's voice this season. So I don't know if that was, you know how rumors spread and people misunderstand things and then they get completely blown out of proportion and then people continuously pass on information that they heard that wasn't true in the first place. So I don't know if there's any truth to that whatsoever, but
I think what it was that Soundwave can speak.
Well, everybody knows that, but somebody was claiming that the writers were saying that he will speak in season two.
Okay, I had thought that what they had said was that he is capable of speech, not necessarily that he would, because about the same time that came out and about, there were people supposedly saying, there was somebody supposedly saying that, hey, I know a guy, which those are always great, but Soundwave's going to talk, we were going to have combiners, and that an Autobot was going to die in the first half of the season for some of the other things that were about the same time frame that we found out. That so
I'm honestly
we've not seen a sign of combiners in Prime. We're through the first half of the season. No Autobots have died.
It is unless you want to count. Though.
Yeah.
Who apparently this is an Arms Micron toy listing, so maybe that leaked into it, but I mean.
Yeah.
That whole thing.
So a lot of the things that were floating around there for a while are potentially misconceptions because we did have somebody die and we've not had anything close to a combiner yet, but
so maybe Soundwave speaking was actually Soundwave's face will get scratched. Like maybe that's.
Yeah. Or you hear him go rah, and make a sound as he's hit. Yeah. Not that he's going to bust out some Silent Bob action and then have a soliloquy
about everything that'll blow our minds. We've got Soundwave getting his faceplate messed with, and if you can clearly see in that teaser, Wheeljack throws himself at Soundwave, and Soundwave's way of fighting back is like the most awesomely I don't give a flying crap about what you're doing, like dodging of his swords, which was awesome. And then, like, just busting out the tentacles. It looks like he's, like, literally going to, like, plug one into Wheeljack's chest. I'm like, I want to see this force of nature Soundwave at work. Like, I love when they're like, we got a bogey on our tail. And I'm like, oh, it's Soundwave. You're dead. You're all dead. So I'm kind of setting myself up, I admit, for kind of disappointment here. But at the same time, this is going to be an episode where it seems the main antagonist force will just be Soundwave. And that means stuff could happen. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to build my Arms Micron Soundwave Minicon before next weekend. It's got to happen. It probably won't happen, but man, yeah, I'm kind of excited.
Yeah, I'm trying not to be because I know the further my imagination goes, it's just going to be Soundwave was kind of a badass and he didn't do anything we didn't expect him to, and then the next episode it's reset and we're not going to see him for another 10 episodes.
I just, seeing him in that brief clip of the fight scene, dodging the sword attacks in the way that he did, already had me excited enough. Like,
yes.
Even if they do nothing with his face other than just crack his faceplate and leave it cosmetic, I don't care. Like, just to see him once again, like, in single combat with another Cybertronian and so effortlessly, like, dispatch the opponent. Like, that kind of thing with Soundwave. Like, when he did it to Arachnid, I was really pumped. Like, as short as that scene was. So
yeah, I just hope they're building up to something with him that's legitimately awesome, because if they finally do have some big reveal for Soundwave, and the biggest thing they have for him is he talks in a G1 voice, it's going to be the most anticlimactic, I'm just going to walk out of the room and take a piss moment that I've ever had.
So what voice would you want?
Bobcat Goldthwait.
We've talked about that before. I want something so horrific that it gives you nightmares. If it's anything less than that, then they might as well not even make him talk.
So like a transmutate?
I want him to sound like a demon.
What do demons sound like? Bobcat Goldthwait?
Probably something that I can't replicate with my vocal cords. I just want him to just scream in the most demon painful way possible that makes you like, just put the freaking faceplate back on that guy. Jesus.
Speaking of Frank Welker, if you know, because he is on the show, and thus it is a decent hypothesis that doing a G1 voice might be the only payoff. Frank Welker played the Vehicon voice in this episode, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, I saw that, and I was
it's
like, whoa,
like they're okay. Trading it. Like every time a Vehicon speaks, it's someone else from the cast doing it. It's almost like this game they're playing, like musical chairs.
At least this way, it's not. It that also helps the fact that they're not all just drones and copies of the same form if they're getting different voices each time.
Yeah, definitely. And also, what was the other thing I was going to point out? Aaron, just so you know, another little minor bit of animation from the Mexican standoff. Optimus Prime's eyes, which are very much like the old, you know, the live-action movie symbols eyes.
Like camera lens.
Yeah, the camera thing rotates very slightly inside his iris when they do the big close-up on his eyes.
When we get done here, if the Diablo 3 servers aren't cooperating, I'll go kick somebody off of the TV and say, I'm going to watch my Transformers now, and then sit down in a big huff.
Only 22 minutes. The only other thing I can think to mention is that last weekend's Hub Family movie was Alvin and the Chipmunks, the Werewolf Chipmunk, or whatever it was called. Which certainly looked like it was a blast. Did either of you guys watch it?
No. Way to ruin lycanthropy, Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh my god! Sorry, I just noticed something I didn't notice before. You know when Optimus Prime comes out of the mists after the avalanche that takes out Dreadwing? And that one Viacon like opens fire on him?
Yes.
The moment that Viacon fires, Starscream leaps up on one leg and covers his face. Like, nah! Like, don't hurt me kind of stuff. I did not notice that until just now. That's fantastic. Anyway. Do we have anything else to drop about the episode?
No.
Nope.
No.
Dr. Wu, if you can't make me a moped or Apex armor, at least make me the handcuffs that they put on Starscream, because if you don't do that, then I'm sorry, but Unicron.com kicked your ass as far as making stuff for the current popular TV show. Bop, gauntlet dropped. Anyway, we will be back next week to talk about Triage. I hope that this has been helpful to you in some way if you're listening in. Thank you once again for sticking with us on these prime times. Hit up the thread, discuss the episode, you know, in nice, calm, rational ways. Sup, Aaron? And we'll be back next week. So until then, ladies and gentlemen, that's been me, Gog Dog, and Aaron. We are Prime out.
What the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.